My name is Hari Sridhar. Today is the 4th of August 2022 and the time is 12:05 p.m. This is the fourth session, right? Yeah, the fourth session of an interview with Rohan Arthur, and this interview forms part of a series I'm doing for the archives at NCBS, looking at the intersection of science with conservation policy and action in India. Rohan, the last time when we finished speaking, I was asking you about, you know, the different kinds of research that you've been involved in. And you know, your PhD was on coral reefs, but since then it's moved in different directions. And I was asking you whether this was mainly through the interests of people who started working with you, or whether there is a broader vision, even if it wasn't there at the start, but you know, over time, whether a broader vision has evolved around what is called the Oceans and Coasts program. So I was wondering, you know, to start with, whether you want to say a little more about that. And to ask you a more specific question related to that is, you know, when did you start thinking about this as a program, you know, an Oceans and Coasts program?
So yeah, since we spoke last, I've been thinking about this a bit, you know, and I think that if you look at all the different directions that the group has been taking, it does look like a bit of a dog's breakfast, you know, doesn't it? It's gone off in many, many different directions. And some would say much too many directions and much too shallowly. You know, and I was trying to think about if there was, you know, some kind of method to how we went about constructing the program of research that we undertook as a group. And the honest truth is I don't think there's anything strategic or planned about. I part of that is because I'm a messy thinker. I do not really have the patience for this grand, you know, grand strategic visioning. And I think part of me even, you know, rankles at the idea of the strategic vision kind of things, because it seems to be so much, it reeks so much of management speak, you know. And so the truth is that around the 2000s or so, I'm back from my PhD and I'm trying to, you know, get something started of my own work. And there, at that time, there were not really too many options for researchers who wanted to study marine systems in ways that required you getting your feet wet, you know, and putting your face in the water. That, it didn't really exist. There weren't too many places that could offer that. And so many researchers just came to me, many young researchers came to me. And most of them I had to turn away because I just didn't have the bandwidth, I didn't have the resources, I didn't have the knowledge to be able to support them. But I suppose the ones that I'm just most persistent stayed on, okay? And much of what I did was really support them in what they wanted to do, okay? So for the longest time, I think that the way I looked at the OCP program, the Oceans and Coasts program, was really as a kind of platform for people to explore these marine systems in as broad a possible way as possible. But I think more or less they have aligned with where my interests have gone as well. First of all, heavily based in the field, okay, embedded pieces of research, much of it based strictly, and to begin with at least, very much in ecology, but then trying to look at the human nature interface. So I think the growth of the program has been organic. You know, if I'm forced into a corner to define it, you know, define what we do, I would say that it's based on field-based studies that explore the human nature interface, okay? Mm-hmm. And more or less captures pretty much all the work we've done over the last quarter of a century. But, you know, I recognize that says very little, okay? So I was thinking that perhaps one way to think about it is to, you know, to that we've limited our work to certain habitats. We haven't worked on a whole range of habitats. As a group, we worked on, you know, the bulk of the work is on, we've been on coral reef atolls, okay? Mm-hmm. Not even on coral reefs, okay? We haven't worked, for instance, despite my initial work in the, that I started in the Andamans, we haven't worked on coral reefs in the Andamans much mm-hmm. after that, a little bit, but not too much. And we haven't worked anywhere along the, you know, in the continent itself. So we've worked on oceanic islands and we've worked largely on coral atolls. We've done a fair bit of work in seagrass meadows, okay? And we've done some work on coastal fisheries. So these are the limited number of habitats that I've that we've been working in, and I can't claim to understand them well, and I think that very broadly, okay, these are the things that we are trying to understand as we go forward. Okay. So yeah, the other way to try and organize them, organize the work that we're doing is along the dimension of ideas. Okay. Mm-hmm. And there, I think there is some kind of a unifying principle. I think that what interests me the most is the relationship between species. Okay. Mm-hmm. How communities are assembled, how species interact, and how this interaction translates to ecosystem function, right? How species behave, and how this mediates their role in ecosystem function. Mm-hmm. So that's very, very broadly what we're doing with ecology. So I'm interested in how societies organize around the way resources are shared and they're managed. Okay, so once again, it's about that interaction. And of course, given the realities of the places that we work in, I'm interested in how climate change or other disturbances influence or mediate these relationships. Okay, how climate change influences community assembly, how climate change influences interactions and functions. Okay. Mm-hmm. How it changes the way humans interact with their resources. Okay. So, but those are the dimensions along which I can justify or post hoc think about the broad framework of our program. But I mean, I suppose if I'm truly honest, I have to admit that I'm just a dabbler and a dilettante, And the only thing that I do is I reject the idea of being an expert in anything. Okay. Mm-hmm. Because I know exactly how sclerotic the idea of expertise can be. I think being a dilettante, allows you a certain irresponsibility, which I think is precious to me.
I remember you telling me that even at the time when you came back, that you were interested in capacity building in the field of marine ecology. So when you came back and, sort of decided to join, be part of NCF formally, was that an important driver that, in addition to the research that you might want to, what I'm interested in knowing is that were you already thinking about the program in those terms as being a platform for others who are interested to be able to do the work they want to do?
So, as I told you, there was this one exercise that I undertook for WCS, okay, to set up some kind of a large marine program within India. I think in doing that, one thing that became clear to me, okay, and I, I say that I'm a messy thinker and all the rest of it, and I don't have the plan for, don't have the mind for any kind of strategic vision. But that was one time when I actually did that exercise, because mm-hmm. I was forced into it. And while doing it, I realized that it doesn't matter what kind of strategic vision you might have. What we're really limited by in India is, are the people, the resources themselves. We don't have the human resources. We don't have the people who are, they may be interested, okay? Mm-hmm. Often they just don't have the ability to access these ecosystems. Mm-hmm. Unlike many terrestrial environments, where problems of access are really just problems with the forest department. Okay, mm-hmm. So all the you have this forest department safeguarding all these locations against the big bad researchers, but in the marine system it becomes a little bit more than that. Okay, there's one more barrier, which is the barrier of water. Mm-hmm. That prevents people from accessing these ecosystems. And so that's one thing, that we didn't have people who were able to even appreciate the dimensions of the problem, or mm-hmm. to think about how you would construct questions within these ecosystems, right? The culture of water is very, very new in India. It's surprising how, for a country as large as ours, so few people know how to swim. Mm-hmm. I mean, in hindsight, of course, it's not very surprising. We just don't have the infrastructure to teach people how to swim. Okay, growing up even in a city like Bombay, okay, which is one of the biggest cities in the country, I didn't have access to swimming pools or any other place. The Arabian Sea was not a place where you learned how to swim. Okay, growing up in a house like, you know, like mine, the sea was a place where people went to die. They didn't they didn't go to swim. Okay, people died when they went to the sea, so you had to stay away from the sea. And that's the, you know, I think I talked about that in the very first first session. And that's honestly the way that many people in the country, you know, think about the sea. I think there are deep cultural barriers as well that prevent us from engaging this, with the sea as much. Also, particularly our coastal waters, you know, are not extremely inviting. They're not very inviting at all because they have such a lot of river influence and things like that. Visibility is typically extremely low. Okay. And even though there are phenomenal ecosystems along the entire coastline, most people don't actually enter them. A snorkel and mask was a, you know, is a fairly new addition to equipment in terms of in India. So it's the most basic equipment, but we don't have it. We didn't have it back then. And so while having a pair of binoculars, okay, and a good pair of walking shoes was all you required if you wanted to do bird watching or to enter into the forest. In the sea, it was very different. It really was, and I think to a large extent continues to be in India, one of those mystic realm. You know, you see the old videos of Jacques Cousteau, or you see a BBC documentary, and that's about all. Okay, it really is a realm apart. And so, to answer your question, what I realize is that it didn't matter what kind of strategic vision you might have, what you're limited by is people. And I don't know if I actually felt that NCF would be the place where we would develop those resources. Okay, I think that came with time. In, you know, at the start, I suspect I felt that I was just too raw myself. Okay, too inadequate and too inexperienced myself to call myself a marine ecologist. Okay, and therefore give people any sense of the, you know, of the that I could actually help other people in this in that process.
And what about, you know, you described that it started with an interest in ecology, and then there was also the interest in human nature interactions. Was there at that point also the interest to actually get involved in conservation action, you know, interventions? I know that with other programs that has been there from other programs of NCF that has been there from an early stage, but I'm curious about how you were thinking about it. Was the focus mostly on research?
To start with, no. Okay, I think that I did think that there would be, you know, some kind of conservation action that we would want to take, and I think that for me, for instance, the idea of setting up marine protected areas or making a case for marine protected areas was extremely important to begin with. Okay? And in the Lakshadweep, I thought it would be an ideal place to set up not marine protected areas, but fisheries reserves of some sort. Okay. And we made some initial attempts, and they were extremely naive. You know, when we talk about the turtle work, you know, I'm not sure if we've already spoken about this, that, you know, it caused a huge amount of conflict because of my own naivety about how the system functioned at that point. Yeah. Also, when I came back from my PhD, I got sucked into the whole tsunami work, looking at the effect of the tsunami on the West Coast. And then we became, you know, as a group, the entire all the people working on the tsunami project became quite, you know, took fairly strong stands, okay, about the kinds of development that were happening post-tsunami. Okay. So after the tsunami, for instance, there was a huge amount of the of money being poured into building coastal defenses.
Mm-hmm.
Many international agencies and the Indian government, as a kind of knee-jerk reactionary response to the tsunami, were wanting to build, you know, to dike up the entire east coast and to transform the entire east coast to make the, to protect them against the next tsunami. Okay. And all of us who were working along that in that project felt that this was something that we really needed to oppose. And so that, you know, we did that, I think, fairly strongly. And so I think none of that was systematic. All of that was actually, you know, in reaction to proposals mm-hmm. that were out, which we felt that we needed to take a stance against based on what we knew of how coastal systems functioned, et cetera. But I don't think that I even knew how to construct something that would be strategic, okay, and try to address the, you know, some of these issues, okay, within the conservation realm. The other thing is, of course, since my interest has been largely on climate change, okay, fairly early on, I started realizing that the marine protected area, which would be the one magic bullet that most people in marine systems believe is the way to conserve, you know, coral reefs and fisheries and etc. and a whole range of other issues. Given the magnitude of climate change, I wasn't convinced that marine protected areas would be able, would be, you know, a useful means at all. And so I think, you know, within conservation, we have these two big crises, right? You have the biodiversity crisis and you have the climate change crisis. And I think both of them raise slightly different sets of challenges for the way you... and so, because I spent much of my time, I'm spending much of my time looking at the climate change crisis, I felt that the biggest problem for us is that we just don't have enough of information about how these systems operated. And so before we could even conceive of any local conservation that was spatial and, you know, that was place-based, I first needed to understand how that place functioned. Okay. So that, I think, has been more or less the approach that I've taken.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And today, where do you think you are? I mean, are you today at a place where, in terms of information, you think you've learned enough to sort of try and get involved in some kind of intervention? The other issue, of course, is, you know, with to do with a problem like climate change, that interventions, the most useful interventions are probably at need to happen at a much larger spatial scale. Right?
Yeah. So, of course, so that's the thing, right? And I think, you know, I think we're jumping back and forth over here, but that's fine. I think at some point I began to realize that whatever happens with the ecosystem, particularly in the context of coral atolls like Lakshadweep.
Rohan, sorry. Hello.
Sorry. You've frozen a bit. Hari?
Hello?
Yeah, Hari, I can hear you, but you're frozen.